My guest at this time is Christopher C. Horner. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington. He's also the author of numerous books on the climate change debate, including The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Power Grab, How Obama's Green Policies Will Steal Your Freedom and Bankrupt America. Since our chat about the Paris Climate Summit last week, he also has a new title, Climate Criminal, which we'll get to in a moment. Chris joins me now from Paris, and Chris, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Greg, very much.
Well, let's start with some interesting comments that Secretary of State John Kerry made at this conference. He, of course, is leading the charge for the Obama administration in trying to get this deal done. But here is what he admitted in trying to get smaller nations to come on board this agreement.
The fact is that even if every single American citizen biked to work, carpooled to school, used only solar panels to power their homes, if we each planted a dozen trees, if we somehow eliminated all of our domestic greenhouse gas emissions, guess what? That still wouldn't be enough to offset the carbon pollution coming from the rest of the world. If all the industrial nations went down to zero emissions, remember what I just said, all the industrial nations went down to zero emissions, it wouldn't be enough. Not when more than 65% of the world's carbon pollution comes from the developing world.
So, Chris, is the takeaway here that the developing world is really the problem, or that what they're trying to accomplish here is unfeasible?
Well, you can reasonably take both away. I'm with the secretary on all of this. If you accept all of their assumptions, and if you accept that carbon dioxide suddenly is now pollution, which is the new term because people are starting to realize it's plant food, but they don't like the fact it's also associated with human energy use. Man produces a fraction, a small fraction of the global CO2, and global CO2 is a small fraction of greenhouse gases, meaning, water vapor is 98%. And then there's the sun and other things. So what he's doing is inadvertently pointing out that this is all pain, no gain. He won't admit to the pain. They still say that if the state uses its coercive powers and forces you into energy rationing and so on, and doing what we do here, you get your own juice by riding a bicycle, you employ drudgery, you can charge your iPhone in 4 hours, 10 minutes by pedaling here at the charging stations. If we all did that, well, it still wouldn't impact the climate, even if you accept their assumptions, which don't need to get in the weeds, but their models build in warming. Their models build in CO2 as the super warming gas, which observations show it isn't. So he's admitting a lot. He's proving far too much in trying to bring others along who I really don't think, despite emails we've obtained and you and I discussed, I think, where others are admitting to the administration it's all about money. If you want a treaty, give us money. And we're talking enormous sums of money. He seems to have missed the memo. It's just about the money.
When he talks about going to zero, obviously that's not where the Obama administration regulations are right now, but what level do you think their ultimate goal is?
Well, the problem is you read they're talking 70 to 95% reductions in this document. They really do think that you can eliminate, bring us back to the renewable age, which we left back over 100 years ago because we could. Suddenly we liberated hydrocarbon energy. We didn't have to live on hydropower or solar power, which, by the way, is a contemporary of coal-fired power, as is wind power. We didn't have to do that anymore because we suddenly had we knew how to use our abundant energy resources. We're not going back to that because we left it. It was a time of much shortened lifespans, disease, drudgery, infant mortality, crop failures leading to catastrophe and so on. It's obviously not going to occur. I've read some academic papers lately about the overpromising that occurs on fora like this, including the climate fora. And you really take away from any seriousness you're attempting to attach to the project when you, I guess the president would say, pop off like that. But it's consistent with one thing. It's consistent with this sort of do what I want or everyone dies theme that it just costs so much. What they want to do, it's not about the climate, but anyway, it just costs so much. They have to try to terrify you with catastrophic projections. That is, without that, it would never happen. getting to zero is just, this is pure fantasy land. Now, I say this after a few days here where you just shake your head. You wonder where in the world their heads are. But it's pure fantasy land. And today, in prepared remarks, by the way, it didn't seem he was deviating from his script. The Secretary of State said that people who don't agree with him don't believe in gravity either. We've really veered from the norm in this process in terms of standards and behavior, standards of burden of proof and decorum and debate. I suppose I first came in 2000. These are devolving a little more rapidly than I had expected.
We're talking with Chris Horner. And Chris, as you well know, the main news coverage over the past several days here in the United States has been related to the terrorist attacks. So there hasn't been much coverage of the climate summit whatsoever. What has trickled through seems to be Arnold Schwarzenegger telling everybody to stop eating meat to contribute to the solution here. And also that there might be hiccups in getting to a final resolution because there's been some reports that they might plead for Pope Francis to come in to try and seal the deal here. So how much friction is there in getting a deal done? And are comments like those of Schwarzenegger par for the course there this week?
He's really just catering to a narrow base, just like the Secretary's comments. If you don't believe with us, believe what we do, you don't believe in gravity. They're simply playing to what the president calls a narrow margin of people back home. And I'm not sure if they realize it. Maybe they are all living in this wonderful bubble. But there's a tremendous amount of tension because the new treaty draft just came out about 2 hours ago, and it dropped the International Climate Justice Tribunal. Yes, it had that until this late date, a global warming court, just to show you how serious this is. We're at the negotiating hall now. I'm waiting to see if there's any what was predicted as eruption out of some countries. It's clearly going to leave the Greens upset and some countries upset because it's kicking the can down the road on a few issues. And I don't doubt that they'll seriously consider calling in the Pope, but in which case, he's going to couch this in terms of social justice. And as I have mentioned to you, that is truly perverse. I'm not saying the Pope knows this, but social justice, as they see it, is killing tens of thousands of the most vulnerable in every country. These policies, by the way, demanded in the name of social justice. According to their own newspapers, every country the president used to point us to, Western European nations, it's just, we're going to have to point this out again if they try that angle in a desperate attempt to get everybody to agree to what is plainly a treaty, but the administration and the president of this event, the French foreign minister, has said we can't admit it's a treaty, or the people's elected representatives in the United States will kill it.
Chris, I mentioned in our introduction that upon your arrival in Paris a few days ago, you, one of your colleagues from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and several others who are well known for pushing back against the UN version of climate change science. There's Myron Ebel, Mark Morano, Bjorn Lomborg, among others, who have been branded climate criminals. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I was walking into an event when I saw these all over these fairly decent-sized posters. Sadly, they didn't consult with me on the image, but they, you know, fair use, I suppose. But the truth is, even though it was even covered by the New York Times as news, as I told the reporter, and he was kind enough to partly include, this move's being, it's getting a little long in the tooth, putting up the bad guys' pictures so everybody knows what they look like. For whatever reason, I don't know. We can play the what if Sarah Palin did a game if you want, but they really want everybody here to know what we look like. The first time I saw this in similar form, though it was a group wanted poster, was in Montreal in 2005. So they have very limited repertoire. It's all what they're sure is going to intimidate people who are inconvenient out of their way, because the buzz here in Paris is the U.S. Congress is the greatest obstacle to them obtaining a treaty that they refuse to call a treaty. Well, that means the democratic process. There's nothing democratic about this process, and if you allow Congress to get a crack at this, it's over. They openly admit it. Secretary Kerry admitted it in a hearing recently in the Senate. They can't do it as a treaty because our treaty process, under the Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, this would never fly. No free society would ever do to itself what they're demanding of us. And when we point these things out, it isn't just, you can accept all of their claims about computer model projections of the future. We point out the policies, history, that it won't impact the climate, that it's about a wealth transfer, that it will kill the most vulnerable, that it's a gesture clearly about what they're openly acknowledging here, to redesign the global economic system. And when you point those things out because they aren't popular in the United States, you are a criminal. Well, if that's the world you want to design, this is your crowd.
And lastly, talk a little bit about what you're actually doing there in Paris with all these different countries represented there. Are you lobbying? What exactly is your role as this plays out?
Now, I have observer status for an NGO, non-governmental organization, CEI, Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're reporting back, giving interviews to U.S. audiences to try to let them know what's going on, writing pieces. I have two up on what's transpired here at the Daily Caller so far and one at globalwarming.org, just trying to keep the public back home who don't have the pleasure of coming here and having their faces plastered all over the city aware of what's going on here, because it's at their expense if they succeed.
Well, there's no bounty on your head yet, Chris, so I guess that's a good way to think about it.
No, I actually turned myself into collected, so I should forget about it.
Well, on that note, stay safe. Fascinating updates. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, Greg, very much.
Christopher C. Horner is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's also the author of numerous books on the climate change debate, including The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change and Power Grab, How Obama's Green Policies Will Steal Your Freedom and Bankrupt America. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.